Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. We are joined, I'm very pleased to say, by the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Mike Rogers of Michigan, a man who we have regarded with great admiration for a long time, thanks to his service to our country in uniform as well as in the House of Representatives, the FBI, and he is now, of course, in an extraordinarily important position. And Mike, I welcome you back to Secure Freedom Radio. I want to start, if I could, with just your take on a problem that I think a lot of us are beginning to feel is getting critical, namely the implications for national security writ large of the kinds of budget cuts that are now in prospect. I'd like to get your read on that budget deal and whether these concerns are grounded in, if you can.
Yeah, Frank, thanks. First of all, thanks for having me back, and thanks for all that you do, and thanks for being that solid voice for on national security issues that is sorely needed.
Thanks.
I am concerned about it, and I mentioned that during the course of the debate. You know, it's very easy, and we have seen this before, where it's easy just to go and say, well, there's a big budget. Let's just take a slice out of it and move on. Well, the problem is, and it's very clear in the Constitution that we're supposed to protect and defend America, and that's the oath that we take. And there's one place that the government ought to be spending money, and that is to make sure America is safe. And do I think there's inefficiencies that we can find? Absolutely. Do I think that we can gut this thing so that we become a hollow army and suffer the same consequences as we have prior to North Korea, prior to World War II, prior to World War I? I think would be a serious mistake.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And I appreciate you saying it so directly, because it's the kind of alarm that needs to be heard both inside the Congress as well as out. Congressman, I know you have been working hard on an issue that should be of concern to all of us, bioterrorism, or simply biowarfare for that matter, waged against this country, our preparedness for it, and taking steps to improve that preparedness. Tell us what you've been doing and what we could do to help you get something done in this respect.
Yeah, no, thanks, Frank. This is important, and it's one of those things, it's like the fire department. You hope to God you never need them, but when you pick up the phone, they better be there. And that's exactly what we're doing on bio defense preparedness. One thing we know from even the information coming out of the bin Laden compound was that they are still very interested in biological, chemical, or nuclear, or radiological weapons. I mean, they're still very, very interested in getting their hands on them. I mean, you can imagine the spectacular attack that they, in their minds, would have if they could pull one of those off. So one of the things that when I looked at this, we're just not as prepared as we need to be in stockpiles of vaccines for anthrax or smallpox or radiological sickness. And so what this does, this bill does, is says two things. We're going to set some money aside in national defense that allows us to be prepared for an attack like this. So we could stockpile vaccines, number one. Or two, the next generation of cures for all of those things, and it go, you know, it changes. Whatever the bad guys get their hands on, we want to be able to prepare to defend against and to inoculate against. It allows something called getting through the valley of death. And so a vaccine developer has no reason to spend money trying to develop a vaccine on something that there's only one customer. It's not very attractive to the U.S. government for stockpiling. So we created this fund to help them in that research, so that we can get to a place where the government can work with them to order vaccines and help them develop these vaccines, so we can be prepared in case, one of those attacks actually happens.
Yeah. Is this described as Project BioShield, and how can people find out more about this legislation and support your efforts to get it enacted?
Yeah, they can come to my website at mikerogers.gov and go there. That's the best place. And we have it's called BARDA. And B-A-R-D-A, And if you just get on my website, you'll see all the information we posted about BARDA and what it is and how people can get involved and be supportive. And it's past committee. It should be on the House floor when we get back in September. And I'm looking forward to hopefully getting enough support to get this thing through. And it's one of those things. You know, if somebody would say, well, we haven't had a large-scale smallpox attack, why would we do this? Well, just because you don't have a fire in your house every day doesn't mean you don't want a fire department, and we've got to have it ready to go.
Yeah, and I salute you for your conscientious attention to this problem, because it is being terribly neglected, and I think you're right. The bin Laden evidence, among other things, is a very direct warning that it's in our prospectively, at least, in our future. Quickly, and I know we're going to have to let you go early, probably, Congressman Mike Rogers, our guest from the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. Iran is in the news again today, apparently revealing that it has many more centrifuges of an advanced design up and running, spinning presumably into the kind of material they need for nuclear weapons, uranium. How imminent is this problem of a nuclear weapon in the hands of one of the most dangerous regimes on the planet, and is there anything you would recommend we do about it at this point?
Well, as you know, you and I have chatted before. I think this is one of those problems that people didn't want to believe was there. And I started talking about it in 2004 with a pretty aggressive report on Iran that said, in fact, yes, they do have these weapons, and they're on a much faster track. And, of course, now we find out, unfortunately, that was accurate. And why this is important is, imagine a regime that is a state sponsor of terror that has actually killed U.S. soldiers, by the way, we believe, or contributed to the killing of U.S. soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan by supplying weapon systems and other things.
And Lebanon and Saudi Arabia, among other places, right?
Absolutely. So we know they're an active state sponsor of terrorism, now gets the cover of nuclear weapons. And what we believe is the first part of that is not the use of the nuclear weapons, which could be likely, and they've said themselves they would use them, but the increase in this conventional effort to destabilize regimes and cause trouble everywhere. I mean, you can imagine the problems that this causes and the destabilization in the Middle East, and it sparks off a nuclear arms race. This is about the worst of all conditions.
Even if they don't use the weapons outright, this sort of cover or protection, as you say, for their machinations is very worrying. Got it.
Well, very worrying, and how that destabilizes. And then, of course, now you have Saudi Arabia saying, well, they'll go, and Turkey says, well, I can't let Iran have it, or we're not going to have it. And then you've got a horrible concern of all of these countries having nuclear weapons. This is a bad day.
Yeah.
And this administration just has not taken this problem head on or seriously. They were still looking for talks, I think, with Ahmadinejad when they should have been looking for tougher sanctions to get this thing stopped. And at some point, we may be too far gone. We may have to look at other means, but we've got to make sure that Iran does not possess nuclear weapons. It's just too dangerous.
Yeah, even the Washington Post is reporting that sanctions are not working, so I guess the dime is finally dropping on this. Congressman, I know I've got to let you go. Quickly, can I just ask one last question?
Sure.
The electromagnetic pulse threat that your colleague Roscoe Bartlett and others have been warning about for some time seems to be something that it may be emerging from the partnership between North Korea, who's expected to conduct another nuclear test any day now, and seems to have an EMP design in the works. Is that something that particularly concerns you about this Iranian capability, should it be launched, for example, off of a ship off our coast and have a potentially catastrophic effect on the country?
Oh, absolutely. And what that does, that electric magnetic pulse, is everything electronic basically fries and comes to a stop. And it is, completely concerning to a country like the United States, who is so heavily dependent on electronics, on our internet. I mean, it's all part of our commercial system here now. It's very integrated, not to mention our early warning satellites, our ability to launch and accurately hit a target. All of those things are jeopardized. Now, the good news is that there has been hardening and other things happening in the last few years. That's the good news. The bad news is we're just nowhere near prepared if, in fact, they are successful in building and being able to find a delivery system for an EMP. So we've got a lot of work to do. It's something that we need to be concerned about. It's something that we are taking a look at least in the Intelligence Committee, I can guarantee you. And we hope that before we're done and before Roscoe is done, they'll have a much better public awareness of what this threat is.
Yeah. Well, just to close on that point, Congressman Mike Rogers, there is legislation which I would commend to you, the SHIELD Act in the Congress that urgently needs to be adopted to try to take, as you say, that next step of preparedness to protect the country against this real and, I'm afraid, growing threat, not just, by the way, from Iran and North Korea and perhaps Russia and China, but actually from the sun itself, magnetic storms that are in the prospect. Anyway, Mike Rogers, thank you so much for finding some time with us. I appreciate enormously the work that you're doing, and congratulate you again on this initiative on bio warfare preparedness, and hopefully also EMP preparedness. Thank you, sir. Good luck with this recess, and keep up the great work. We look forward to talking with you again soon.
I hope so. Thanks for having me on, Frank, and thanks again for being that solid voice on national security.
Thank you, sir. All the best.
First line of defense in the war of ideas. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Congress doesn't have a budget for 2011, but the GOP has proposed a budget for 2012, and Bill Bennett likes it.
Maybe it helps to have that 2012 in the background, people hearing and seeing Ryan and the Republicans saying they're serious about really cutting the budget
as a backdrop
to this debate about 2011. People make the decision, well, Republicans seem much more serious about this.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We are joined by Michael Paddock. He is the chief executive officer of a private company called Grants Office, which specializes in grant development across the country. He is also, and our principal reason for being anxious to talk with him, is in his capacity as a columnist on these matters for the Homeland Security Today publication that we prize here at Secure Freedom Radio. Michael, it's great to have you with us. There's a lot going on in this homeland security space, I know, at the moment, and a lot more in prospect. We were just talking with Congressman Mike Rogers about the prospect of serious cuts being inflicted upon the security programs of the United States writ large, including Homeland Security, as well as defense and intelligence and so on. I just wonder, you know, sort of overall, give us a perspective on what you think might be the implications of the sorts of reductions that are now in prospect, and then we'll get into some of how it translates into specific capabilities that may have real bearing on the Homeland Security of the United States.
Sure. Thanks, Frank, and thanks for having me. So we have seen several programs get trimmed in 2011 versus 2010. We saw some significant increases in 2009 with the Recovery Act. And then after the Recovery Act kind of trickled down, $2 billion in justice assistance grants alone, but after the Recovery Act kind of trickled down, we started to see, and with the budget acrimony that came up in the wake of the 2011 budget negotiations, we saw some reductions in funding for the largest Homeland Security programs, the State Homeland Security Program and the Urban Area Security Initiative Program, as well as several programs kind of get chopped. So these several smaller programs. So, there's the potential for continued reductions in many of these programs, and I think it's going to be important to kind of pay attention to the whole landscape of funding for police and fire and other emergency management service providers to make sure that they're aware of all of the different funding sources that are actually available to support their initiatives, because a lot of these programs that focused on terrorism prevention, preparing for, responding to, and deterring terrorist activities are getting less attention. And a lot of that has to do, I think, with the capture and killing of Osama bin Laden and the public perception that the war on terror is largely won, which, of course, all of the threats and all of the vulnerabilities that we were addressing in the wake of 2001, 2002, have continued to emerge and continue to be in existence. And so I think the fact that the work is not done is an important message that the overall public needs to know. But in the meantime, I think we're going to continue to see reductions in the focus on funding for terrorism prevention, particularly the Homeland Security Grant Program, the largest Homeland Security funding program.
Yeah. Michael Paddock, you're following this very closely, I know, so I want to sort of draw you out a little bit on how this actually works, because to the extent that we are focused narrowly on Al-Qaeda, or maybe, as you say, in the person of bin Laden himself, I worry that we're missing a big piece of the problem that we face, and that is, in addition to the so-called violent extremists, or some would have it violent Islamic extremists, the prospect that there is a whole nother category of threats operating inside the United States as well as elsewhere that are, I think, best described as pre-violent activities, often under the rubric of the Muslim Brotherhood, which has, as you know, the mission of destroying Western civilization from within. And I'm just wondering, as you follow these grants, and particularly changes that seem to be underway within the Homeland Security Department with respect to training of those who are supposed to, at the local level, be the sort of front line of defense for our homeland, are you picking up any indication that that we're paying more attention to that part of the problem, the so-called pre-violent part of it? It's often described as non-violent, but I think it's actually preparatory for violent activity. Or is this really being neglected in favor of even too little attention given to the violent piece of this, to say nothing of the non-violent?
Sure. So a lot of that is structural and how the grant funding actually flows down to local agencies, except for the largest urban areas in the country. And here we're talking about Chicago, Los Angeles, the Bay Area of California, Houston, New York City. Except for these largest urban areas, there isn't a lot of direction being provided to the rest of the country in terms of how they should be preparing for these types of events. And so whether we're talking about the sort of emerging threats that may be kind of percolating under the surface, or the more overt violent threats that exist, it's the local government agencies that ultimately have to be prepared for a response to those emergencies. And to the extent that they're being left essentially on their own to develop their own strategies, develop their own plans, and to do their own training and exercises, they're only going to be prepared for the things that they already know to be prepared for, and there isn't a lot of top-down direction from the Department of Homeland Security in terms of how they should be rolling out that training, which is good on the one hand because local agencies should be aware of the threats and vulnerabilities that they themselves are facing, and they, should be able to customize their training and approaches to address those specific threats. On the other hand, if there are nationwide issues that need to be addressed, the system itself doesn't really allow very well for that to occur. And then on top of all of that, systemically, you have each state's involvement in the actual distribution of the funding to the local governments, which has been really kind of a debacle since even the beginning of Homeland Security funding, where each state administers the local Homeland Security funding differently. They have different timelines, different requirements, and ultimately some do a much better job than others at getting that funding down to the local level in a way that the local agencies that are ultimately, again, responsible for the response to either a terrorist threat, terrorist event, or even a natural disaster, getting that funding down to them so that they can use it most effectively, that's been a major issue for the last 10 years.
Yeah. I guess let me just try to put this into layman's language. We're speaking again with Michael Paddock, who is Chief Executive Officer of Grant's Office and also a featured columnist at Homeland Security Today. To put this again in layman's terms, Michael, we're, I guess, watching even at what seems to be the likely reductions in spending, a prodigious amount of money that is sort of sloshing around. You've described, I think, pretty compellingly some of the impediments to it being effectively used, especially, you know, by the local level folks who may have the best sense of what their needs are. But I'm just wondering about this. You know, yesterday, I believe it was, the administration rolled out a new policy with respect to partnering with local groups to deal with some of these threats inside communities, again, focusing on violent extremism. And I just wonder if you've had a chance to take a look at this, but it sounds as though one of the upshots of this is likely to be not only an intensified focus at the direction of these folks in Washington on Christian and conservative and right-wing extremists, but also the idea that folks that have been identified by the government itself as associated with the Muslim Brotherhood are the sort of desired go-to parties for discussing or focusing or countering violent extremism in the Muslim community. Quickly, any thoughts on the advisability of those ideas?
My take on that is really just that it really shows how the whole agency, all the way down to the local levels, really are grasping at trying to come up with a strategy that will actually achieve an overall security among all the different parties that are involved in this, including the more extreme elements, as well as the local government agencies, as well as the citizenry. And they haven't really found the silver bullet that's going to allow them to achieve that. So I think this is just another attempt to try a little different approach and see what works, in a sense, kind of throwing all the spaghetti at the wall and seeing what sticks.
Seeing what sticks. Well, this is inspiring confidence. Michael Paddock, thank you very much for at least describing the challenge to us. And I hope you'll keep us apprised as your column and reportage on this continues to lay bare where the problems are, where there may be some solutions. Thanks so much for joining us. Next up, we have two segments and an extraordinary conversation with T. Boone Pickens on energy security and what we could do to get it. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hey, parents. Finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi, son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean, I'll fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist.
But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ campaign who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira. And like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
Hi, I'm Drew Brees, NFL quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, here with Bugs Bunny to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you fuel your body and your mind.
So what do you like to throw around the football like Drew?
Skateboard.
Play frisbee in the park.
Ride a bike.
Kick the soccer ball around.
Or dance in your room.
Just move it your way.
Because nothing makes you feel better than moving every day.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
So be a player.
You'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
Move it your way and be a player.
Get up and play an hour a day, Doc. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
That's right, at letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
I'll pick you up after school. Okay, I got it.
It's easy to take a day for granted. You and your family are connected by routine, and you stick to it. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? What if your day's routine is disrupted, and you can't reach your family? Have you planned for that? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit. Make a plan. Be informed. Today. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Ready.gov. This message brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We have a very special guest joining us, Boone Pickens, T. Boone Pickens, to be precise. He is a hugely successful oil man, entrepreneur, energy savant, and a man that we have turned to in the past for counsel on the energy security of the United States. And it's a great privilege to be with you in Dallas, Texas, to visit anew where we are on the energy challenges that we're facing, in particular in light of what we've been hearing out of Iran lately, which I wanted just to use as a way of sort of framing the problem in a kind of real-time way. The military advisor to the supreme leader of Iran has not only boasted about the Muslim world's control of most of the world's oil, but has also started talking about its ability to exercise control over the choke points through which much of that oil must pass to get from its sources to the markets. You have been warning for years now, and particularly in the context of the Pickens plan, which we'll talk about a little bit in a moment, the dangers associated with our energy dependence on such sources and such choke points. And I just wonder, in light of what we're now beginning to hear, does this add even greater urgency to your arguments for a course correction?
Well, Frank, you know, I'm a pretty simple guy, and I see things black and white, and most of the time, clearly. And it's just unbelievable to me. We've been importing oil to the United States since 1948, 65 years ago. That is not necessary. We don't have to do that. And it's all based on free markets. I think it was the cheapest oil, so why not? And as things have unfolded, it's no longer the cheapest oil. It's actually the market is set by OPEC. There's no free market for oil.
Right.
And they clearly told us, due to their social commitments internally, that they have to have 85 at one point. I think probably they've got to have $94 a barrel to balance their books.
And they're well above that now.
Well, I think they have to have 94. They've got to break even at 94.
That's their floor.
That's it. Yeah, that's the floor I think you're looking at on oil.
People have pointed out that in response to the episodic efforts we make actually to drill here, drill now, and otherwise exploit more aggressively our own resources, that this same cartel, OPEC, has been manipulating prices by adjusting their supply downwards when ours picks up. This would seem to validate what you're saying, is they're determined to exercise effective control over both the quantity and certainly the price. Is that a particular concern, again, against the backdrop that so much of the money, it seems, is winding up in the hands of people who really are hostile to this country?
Oh, yeah. You know, I've had plenty to say about that, but...
I'm inviting you to say it again, because it's something I think can't be said often enough.
Well, I don't think there's any question that we're paying for both sides of the war. Jim Woolsey and I, former CIA director, and I've talked about this subject many times. And so it's not a free market. You know, people talk about, now I want to get on our own resources in America. They say, well, you're trying to make us make choices. You're trying to pick winners. I'm not trying to pick winners. I'm trying to pick the United States over people that are not friendly and hostile to us.
Presumably that's the side we would like to have win.
Pardon me?
Presumably that's the side we would like to have win, the United States, as opposed to people hostile to everything.
Sure.
We believe.
I mean, why not pick ourselves winners instead of losers?
Yeah. But this comes to the question, and let's talk a little bit about the pickings.
Let me
point.
Make a point.
Sorry.
That if you go back 10 years that... the United States has paid OPEC over $1 trillion for oil. That's the largest transfer of wealth in the history of mankind, is our purchase of oil from OPEC. Now, go forward. Very simple, again, the analysis is not difficult. But use a floor of $100 for oil and also cap it at one. So we're going to just take $100 a barrel, which were there. We know, I mean, anybody that looks at it, they know that you're going to pay substantially more than 100. But just cap it at 100. That's it. The price of oil going forward for 10 years. The trillion we spent on the last 10 years forward will be 2.2 trillion. That is not sustainable. You can't do that. So if you can't pay $100 for oil, and you can't stand $2.2 trillion as your cost for the next 10 years, what is the solution? I have people tell me that. They said, well, you can't do that. I said, okay, fine. I agree with you. You can't do that. Now what are you going to do? And that's my solution again. It's not hard to understand.
Well, that's where we want to go next.
Get on your own resources.
T. Boone Pickens, VP Mesa Capital. He is a man who has been articulating the problem that we've just been discussing as well as anybody, and has been as creative as anybody in thinking about what can be done to solve it. In fact, including modestly named Pickens' plan that you came up with to try to fix at least a piece of the problem. Tell us what that is about and where it stands now, as it does involve having the government engage in providing a measure of fuel choice.
Okay, to lead into that for me is that for over 40 years, we've had no energy plan for America. So over 40 years, we've never had an energy plan for America. And we are using almost 25% of all the oil produced every day. We use 20 million barrels a day. Okay, now, comparison. Who is second to us? The Chinese. How much do they use? Half what we do. Half what we do. So we're using almost 25% with 4% of the population. And the Chinese are using half what we are with what? 25% of the population.
Something like that, and growing. A
huge, huge
disparity.
Again, not sustainable. You can't continue this.
Especially as their appetite is growing.
Sure.
By the day.
As their appetite grows, demand goes up, price goes up, and there's not an unlimited supply of oil. I don't think the world today can produce 90 million barrels a day. All the oil from everywhere, 90 million barrels a day, on a sustainable basis.
Okay, so what do we do about it?
Well, you've got to get on your own resources. You have to get on your own resources.
Meaning non-oil resources?
Well, that, everything. Everything is prospect.
All of the above.
All of the above.
Specifically,
but you need to first understand the problem.
Okay.
And
the problem
is not understood in Washington.
I agree with you. That's part of why we're doing this program and why we're delighted to have you with us, Steve Boone Pickens. Let me ask again, rather quickly. The Boone Pickens approach to addressing this vital energy shortfall is what? And what does it take our government doing
to make it happen? You have to have a plan. My dad told me a long time ago, I can well remember the conversation in February 1949. I won't tell you why he told me this, but he said, son, a fool with a plan can beat a genius with no plan. And your mother and I have a concern that we have a fool with no plan. That is the way the United States is operated. Yeah. It's operated like a fool with no plan. Mm-hmm. No plan. And so it's like, well, everything will come out all right. You know, one of those kind of things.
What's not going to come out right is...
No.
I'm going to run out of time here if you don't tell me about natural gas and trucks.
Okay, what I did on the Pickens plan was to target. I hunted with a rifle. I picked out the biggest users of diesel fuel and said, now, switch those over to natural gas. And what do you have? That's 8 million 18-wheelers. How many vehicles in America? 250 million. So I'm talking about a small fraction of all the vehicles in America.
But they use a lot of diesel.
That's right. A lot of diesel. 2.5 million barrels a day.
Right.
So if I can get those 8 million over to natural gas, I can cut OPEC in half. We use, the United States, 20 million barrels a day. We produce 5, and we have 2 million barrels of natural gas liquids. So actually we have 5 plus 2, 7, import 13, and of the 13, 5 come from OPEC. That's what I want to stop.
All right. Mr. Pickens, I'm going to ask you right after this short pause to expand upon what we can be doing in terms of the Pickens plan or otherwise to reduce our vulnerabilities to energy insecurity. Straight ahead.
I went from a size 18 down to a size 5, and I was able to keep it off.
Angie had some serious challenges.
I had gone through a divorce and put on quite a bit of weight. There was an accident where I was put on a lot of medication, and I put on over 60 pounds. I tried every kind of diet, but diets just did not work.
Diets don't work is something they hear a lot over at the MetaSystem from Judy Singer.
I heard about Judy Singer's MetaSystem, and I thought, well, you know, couldn't hurt to call, and I called them up, and they told me all about the product, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. From the first week that I was on it, I wasn't hungry a lot, and it was just amazing. Jumping about 3 months ahead, I dropped 63 pounds.
If you're ready for a natural product that cleanses your system and helps you lose fat, talk to a Judy Singer counselor about the MetaSystem. Call 1-800-711-JUDY. 1-800-711-JUDY. The MetaSystem from Judy Singer. Powerful, all-natural weight loss. 1-800-711-JUDY.
Hi. This is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real special forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a non-profit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its special forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Is Nancy Pelosi looking to a higher power to get a balanced budget? Hugh Hewitt sets her straight.
When I hear you speak about this issue, of course, it's the Gospel of Matthew. When I was hungry, you gave me to eat and listen to
the Gospel. I just got to stop here. Nancy Pelosi quoting the Gospel of Matthew, as though that's got anything to do with the government. Let me just tell you, it doesn't.
Can I get an amen?
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org. Even if it's just everyday stuff,
like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really?
What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back with T. Boone Pickens, and he has titillated us by describing the nature of the problem that we are confronting, and we're now going to ask him to share with us some thoughts about what do we do to try to address the diesel truck component of the yawning appetite of the American consuming public for fuel, much of which comes from overseas. You've devised a Pickens plan, as you call it. It's now in the form of the Natural Gas Act in the United States House of Representatives. Please describe what exactly it entails and why it has run into some controversy.
Well, you know, it's H.R. 1380 and introduced in the House three or four months ago. And we have 185 co-sponsors, and they're half Democrats and half Republicans. So it's a nonpartisan issue, and understood, it's pretty hard to be against it, because we're going to now use our resource and quit using the enemy's oil.
And that will be because natural gas will be used as a fuel in modified trucks, is that the idea?
Now, you won't modify the trucks. It'll actually be new trucks.
New trucks. Okay.
What I'd love to have is a mandate, like they had in Southern California for trash trucks. You buy a new one, it has to be natural gas. Mm-hmm. In our bill, that's not the case. There is a tax credit of when you buy new.
An incentive.
Incentive.
But not a subsidy.
It's not a subsidy. It's a tax credit, which is not a subsidy here. I mean, it's a credit against your taxes that you're paying. So here, this, and it could happen fast. You could do it in 5 to 7 years.
And that's it is what?
To get from diesel to natural gas on heavy duty.
In how many trucks?
8 million.
8 million trucks.
Yeah, but if you go back and look at the movement from diesel, from gasoline to diesel, it took 7 years, from 77 to 82. Excuse me, 5 years is all it took, was 77 to 82. You can do the same thing to go to natural gas. But the key to it, and the reason it happens that quickly, is because the fuel is $1.50 to $2 a gallon cheaper. So all of this is going on right now, and that's my opponents will say, just let it happen, let the market dictate, and don't help anybody do anything. No, you're helping America on a security issue, is what it is. And the $1 billion a year for 5 years and out, it sunsets and out. And they say, oh, well, you never sunset. Well, sunset, you can write something in that said, guess what, in 5 years this is over with. We don't care what happens. It's not extended. But the $5 billion, all it does is 143,000 trucks. It doesn't do the 8 million trucks. The 8 million trucks will happen because the price of fuel is so much cheaper. And as you go to scale, the incremental difference, which is about $60,000, it will reduce dramatically, just like it did in Southern California on trash trucks.
Right. And the other piece of this, I assume, is the build-out of an infrastructure to refuel these trucks. How does that fit into
the
this?
Infrastructure will come.
You don't address that? That's simply going to be a demand pull?
No, I think it has a minor part of it, but very minor. But no, the infrastructure will come, just like it did in Southern California. They didn't help the infrastructure, small amount, but it didn't. It came because the business was there, just like the free enterprise system is. If the business is there, all the components come together. You don't have to have the government. So then the next question is, why do you want the government? Because I want them to show direction. Direction from the government is everything. The next step by the president after this is done will be in the next car you buy for your family will be on domestic fuel. It'll be on domestic fuel. That's it. It's that simple. He made a promise to us when he accepted the nomination.
This is Barack Obama.
Yes. In July of 08, at the nomination speech and in the fourth debate, he promised us that in 10 years we would not import any oil from the Mideast. This is the plan to accomplish that.
Now, when you say this is the plan, the piece that you've described in terms of the trucks is pretty straightforward. How does that move us beyond those 8 million trucks to wiping out imports of foreign fuels? And when you say that, you're not talking about Canada, are you, or Mexico? Or you
no.
You're talking about
OPEC.
The unfriendlies.
That's right.
Okay.
Okay, how do you get to the 5 million barrels? Right. Well, when you go to your domestic vehicle, the next car you buy will be on domestic fuel. I don't care what it is. I'm not pushing natural gas. Natural gas is the only one that will work on 18-wheelers. Mm-hmm. There are only two fuels. Gasoline, hybrid, electric will not move an 18-wheeler. It either is diesel or natural gas, one or the other.
Right.
And so it works. Now, going forward, I want to develop all forms of energy. I want the electric car is fine with me. Ethanol, I don't prefer, but I'd rather have it than OPEC oil.
Right.
And
methanol is another possibility derived from, among other things, natural gas, or, for that matter, anything with carbon.
Jim Woolsey has a great idea to let you pull up at the station and you can select your fuel. And you can have methanol, you can have ethanol, you can have gasoline, but they are domestic. They're domestic resources is what we're buying.
Right.
And they're clearly identified that way. And not foreign oil.
Right. Right. And I guess the question, we're speaking once again with T. Boone Pickens, an energy leader in this country, a man who has understood particularly the vulnerabilities of the country to energy dependency on people who are, in many cases at least, downright hostile. To the extent that you envision this as a practicable near-term objective, and the president, as you said, thought it was something that could be achieved 10 years from his election, what needs to be done now, beyond what you're describing in the Pickens plan, to actually give vehicles the kind of capacity to consume these other products, to give consumers, as Jim Woolsey likes to say, fuel choice?
Just pass H.R. 1380. You pass it, and you'll take care of the heavy duty. That model will be used over and over again is what will happen. They'll see that, one, the fuel is 30% cleaner than diesel. It is $2 a gallon cheaper than diesel. It's domestic, it's abundant, and it's ours. All of that will be understood.
Yeah.
I look forward to the day I can see on the side of one of these 18-wheelers going down a highway said, we are on domestic natural gas. We are not on OPEC oil.
Right. No, I look forward to that day as well. I would argue, Mr. Pickens, that we are going to need something in the same nature of government direction to make sure that we have vehicles that can do on the consumer side what you're talking about on the 18-wheeler side. Another piece of legislation introduced in the House is called the Open Fuel Standard for this purpose.
And right.
And to the extent these two are really complementary and of a piece and vitally needed.
They're both about America is what they are.
They're all about America, exactly right.
And it's so, so important for us and the generations to come. And it's all doable. And jobs are created, money saved, taxes are paid on profits made on our fuel here, on our own resources. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Instead of transferring gigabillions of dollars to the unfriendlies. And the other piece of this that I guess is I'm always struck by, and just very quickly if you might respond to this, it seems to me absolutely predictable that if oil is cut off or simply no longer available for whatever reason, the prices and the amounts that we've become accustomed to, we're going to do these things. So the question is, why not do them now?
Exactly.
It's relatively easy instead of later when it's going to be harder.
Oh, there's no question it's going to happen.
Yeah.
But go ahead and show the leadership in Washington. And the president's already said he's going to do this. Here is the plan. Let's do it.
Let's do it now. Mr. Pickens, thank you very much again for your leadership and for the vision that you're bringing to this and the energy, if I may say, as well. Great to talk with you, sir. We'll look forward to doing so again in the near future.
Good. Thank you, Frank.
Join us again tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.